with Stuart Pink and Mark Searby.
Film reviews and movie news.
Yes, it is. It's film reviews and movie news. And joining me for it, he successfully sued a ticket inspector for false advertising after Huey Lewis and the News told him he won't need no credit card to ride this train. It's Mark Searby.
Wow, there's a lot going on in that sentence there.
There is, yeah.
Suing a ticket officer because Huey Lewis told me I could ride it for free because of a credit. Wow. Yeah.
He said that he sung quite, you know, clearly that you didn't need one. And I don't blame you for being angry, to be honest. It's a great argument, isn't it? I'm totally going to use that next time.
Do you think you'll get away with it? I don't think you will.
I'm not sure.
I can't see it. Can't see it. You'll just get a fine. That'll be it.
Probably. Yeah. Again.
Sorry, not invited back on the railways either. No.
Not if anybody's anymore.
No, it's true. Well, you say that. Some people have returned to the railway.
Oh, see what you've done there.
See how I seeked into this, you see. So,
see, we don't just throw this together, do we?
We don't. We plan it at least 2 minutes before we go on air. You know.
Sometimes.
But, you know, so seeking into that, obviously, big film of the week, The Railway Children Return.
Oh, The Railway Children Return. Did they come first and then they returned again?
They returned. So have you seen the original movie?
I know of the story in the children's book and everything. Right. Was there a relatively recent remake?
No. The original movie was 1970.
Oh, okay, yeah.
So
I probably have seen it.
Yeah, well, this is the thing. I think most of us have seen it because it's been on TV through the decades, basically.
Oh, yeah.
You know, Saturday, Sunday, during the week, school holidays, etc. So, yeah, 1970 was the original movie.
I know,
exactly. Making us feel all old. Now we've got a sequel some years later. We won't say how many.
A little while.
Yes, it's a while. The thing is, it is a sequel of sorts, but it's also trying to be its own film. It's about three children who are evacuated from Manchester to a Yorkshire village during the Second World War. There they encounter a young soldier who, much like them, is far from home. This is... So the three children, the three ones who have been evacuated, are taken in by the village's school mistress, who happens to be the daughter of Bobby Waterbury. Some people might be going, don't know who that is. I'll explain. That is the original character from the first one, played by Jenny Agutter. Yes, Jenny Agutter is back in this film. And just to point it out, it's not just a cameo. She is in it all the way through. Okay?
Nice.
So you've got that connection back to the original. But here in this, as I said, kind of sequel of sorts, it's very much a film about the kids and them dealing with the war on a very personal level. So Lily is the oldest of the three kids who are taken in. I think she's very much like she's kind of like the mum of the three of them. You know, she is the one who everybody pays attention to, but at the same time, she's still a kid. She still likes to play hide and seek in the train yard. This is where the film starts to kick into gear, basically, a bit, because there they find a black American soldier hiding in one of the disused carriages. Slowly, they discover that he is on the run because American MP soldiers, who are all white, have been brutalizing him and his friends since they arrived in the village. So the film is very much into talking about racism that young Abe, the young soldier who is hiding out, has to deal with, not just back home in America, but also while he has been stationed in England. Now, I get what the writers are trying to do with this storyline. You know, they're shining a light on racism as it was back then in America and how the atrocities that black Americans had to face actually following them around the world as well, basically. And this was sort of there in the original movie as well. This underlying story of racism was there as well. But what I can't get away from in this film is the fact that it's here again. It's the front and center storyline, But you have a movie here that is set during World War II. And during World War II, the British and Americans joined forces to bring the Nazis down. But in this, it's almost like they're completely separate. And it's a story about internal fighting, which I found very odd, considering, you know, I felt like we should be being told a story here that is about coming together and fighting the Nazis, and how we, you know, how Americans are coming over and helping us and everything. And I'm thinking, okay, well, that's kind of what this is doing. But at the same time, it's just, I found it very odd that we had this central story of, you know, this racism being right at the beginning. I'm not saying it shouldn't be told, because it should be told. It's just, I feel like it's been told in the wrong settings. That's okay. Yeah. That's kind of my issue with it.
A film that should be about coming together.
Well, yeah, and as I said, it does do that. It does do that. But it feels like there is this huge split in the film, and that's causing the issue, whereas you're kind of going, why are we dealing with what is effectively a war on black people here in the UK from these American MPs when there is a bigger story to be told? And yes, I know there are smaller stories to be told. You know, listen, we've reviewed a lot of movies over the past couple of years that we have said about World War II. These are stories we never knew, very small stories. We did, and, you know, this is kind of one of those where it's like it's a small story in a bigger setting. But this feels like it's not hitting the points.
It's not tackled both in this.
Yeah, I think that's the way. Yeah, that's what I'm trying to say, basically. Yeah. So I think, you know, staying away from that. Okay, so that's part of my issue with the movie, is that it does feel maybe it's got it in the wrong setting, I think is the best way to describe it. The other issue I've got with the film is it feels far too old. You know, like it's like, you know, the saying old hat, it's old hat. That's what I'm going to say about this. It's old hat. You know, kids and adults' tastes have changed dramatically since 1970.
It's a very cute film, the first one, wasn't it?
Yeah, exactly. It was perfect for the time. You can't just redo it. Perfect for the time. It was nice. You know, it was a big smash, because at that time, that's what we were saying. You know, 1970, we're talking about before Star Wars, before Jaws, you know, before the big blockbusters. That's the
desperate times, man.
So tastes have moved on. And the issue is it feels the Railway Children Return. I'm talking only about this one, the sequel. Feels like a product of a bygone era that isn't relevant anymore. I'm sorry to say that. It just doesn't feel relevant to modern film-going audiences, which I know it's a shame to say that, because while I was watching it, I was kind of enjoying it. I was kind of like, yeah, this is nice. It's fine. It's okay. You know, I chuckled a few times and whatever else. But it's nothing more than a Sunday afternoon TV movie. That's it. Yeah. It's not.
See, we've had these sort of old-fashioned set films. Like, it's not that stay modern, aren't they?
That's the thing. There is a way of making a movie set in a certain period that still has a modern edge to it. I'm not talking about far too modern. You know, you and I have reviewed movies where I've said to you, there's sarcasm or there's humour in this movie that does not fit with the time period. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about the way that it is easily blended between, hey, look, it's set in World War One or World War Two, and there is that ability to make it still feel very relevant. You know, Operation Mincemeat, which we reviewed the other week, that did it very well. I thought that did very well. And we've reviewed other movies that I thought did it. This one doesn't. It feels, as I said, it feels very old hat. It's just a movie from an older time that I'm afraid to say doesn't feel relevant anymore. I'm not saying it's a bad movie, okay? Because as I said, while I was watching it, I was kind of enjoying it. It took me away from everything else. You know, for an hour and, what is it, 40-something minutes, I was kind of transported away. And I was like, hey, I'm okay. You know, I'm sort of, I was sort of, you know, laid back in the chair watching it. And, you know, so it's not as though I hated the movie. It's just the fact that there are two really big issues with it, and that when you come out of the movie and you start to think about it, you realize it's a movie that really doesn't work, I'm afraid, in the scheme of things.
So I can see this is the kind of film that's 100% going to be on the TV screens at Christmas.
Yes, yes.
We're all going to be sitting around, having eaten loads of turkey, yes, half asleep. Can we watch it falling half asleep and just feel nice and chilled out?
Yeah.
Or is it a bit complicated?
No, no, absolutely. That's exactly what it is. That's it. It's like the first movie, basically, in that, we can sit here and you can sort of take it in, but at the same time, not too complicated. It's that sort of movie, okay?
Yeah.
It is that sort of movie, which sometimes you just want.
Yeah, fair enough. So this is in cinemas now?
It's in cinemas now, yes.
And you would say, rather than being HS2, it's more sort of like Steam Train.
Well, there is a Steam Train in it.
Well, yeah.
Yeah, so, you know. So
I suppose that's what you expect.
Even then, the Steam Train is going particularly fast.
Okay.
So, yeah, maybe not that fast.
Wouldn't get yourself a season ticket then?
Yeah, no, probably not. Probably not. No, I don't think so.
Nice. What else you got for us?
So we've got Don't Make Me Go, which is now on Prime Video. It's about Max, who is a single father who learns he has a brain tumour. He decides to take his teenage daughter, Wally, on a road trip to find the mother who abandoned her years before.
Okay.
Right. People listening in may already know this anyway, but I'm going to be honest here. I'm a sucker for a road trip movie.
Oh, yeah.
I love a road trip movie. I just
anyone
love
who's
it.
Got a camper van or a car journey.
Anything like that. Planes, Trains and Automobiles. I love it. You know, those types of movies. I love them. I really do. And I think it's fair to say Don't Make Me Go is a decent road trip movie. I mean, sure, there's all the familiar bits that you get that are in this movie. You know, teenage daughter, she doesn't want to go on the trip. Teenage daughter reluctantly goes on the trip. Teenage daughter, far more obsessed with texting her mates. Teenage daughter eventually discovers the wider world is amazing.
Knew it was going to happen.
Yeah, you know, I mean, look, it's basic stuff. You knew all of this was going to happen. Yet, there is something very heartwarming throughout this film with both Max and Wally. In fact, I kind of think the film is at its best when John Cho, who plays Max, and Mia Isaac, who plays Wally, are in the scene together. You know, just them two having an argument, having a discussion, having a laugh and a joke. It's all very natural and very real. You know, it's the type of performances that I think fit both characters so naturally that you can't help but love both of them right from the start of the film.
Yeah.
And that, you know, that's just wonderful. That is when you're like, okay, I know who these people are. I like them already. That's the thing. Now, this is going to be tricky, so I'm going to try and do it, but without spoiling it. The one thing about this film that really caught me off guard happens in the finale. I will say that it's something that changes the dynamic of the film. Whether for the better, I'm not too sure, because it kind of didn't sit that well with me. But I guess the filmmakers wanted to mix it up a little bit, you know, stray away from the standard formula that this type of storyline's heading towards, and you kind of know. It certainly didn't make me sit up and go, what? Oh. Okay. Right. I think I was more shocked at the change of pace in what happens than anything else. And I was kind of like, oh, okay. So still trying to process that bit a little bit.
Yeah.
Hopefully I didn't spoil it for anybody. Anybody who has seen the film will know what I'm talking about. But that's it. You know, that aside, this film does kind of move along at a very nice, easygoing pace. It's got a few good things to say about single parenting and coming of age and, you know, trying to connect with your offspring as well, especially on a road trip. I think it does it all in a very sensitive way and also in a bit of a jokey way as well. It's light-hearted. As I said, you know, John Cho is great in this. He's really good. Naturally funny as well. I like that. I mean, we knew he was naturally funny anyway, because he's done some...
We like John Cho.
Yeah, you know, if you've seen him in some...
Star Trek.
He's good in that. You know, he's been really good in a lot of really good stuff. So while this may not be a standout coming-of-age road trip movie, there is something quite wholesome and quite pure about it all. And I came away going, you know what? That was just delightful. Thank you very much. That was just the type of movie that I needed at that time to make me feel upbeat and nice and, you know, just feeling good about yourself.
Lovely. Just seems nice. So it didn't make you feel like the last one. It's a bit more modern and up to date.
Well, it is a modern movie. It is set in the here
twist
and now.
On the
yeah.
Traditional formula.
It's exactly. You know, beyond, as I said, beyond everything that you go, okay, I know where this is going. And as I said, maybe you won't. It's just so much better in making you feel upbeat and delighted than the previous movie.
Excellent. So don't make me go. You actually wanted to go on the road trip.
Yeah, do you know what? I kind of did, actually, to be fair. I did, just because it did look like a lot of fun. And they did visit some weird and wacky places where I was like, I would totally go to these places. So
where did they go?
Well, like, is it a, well,
was that a spoiler?
Kind of, yes.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, there's, you know these sideshow attractions that are on just off the beaten track in America that people write about, like, you know, the biggest ball of wool in the world, or, you know, something random like that. They do go to a couple of those where you're like, okay, that's kind of interesting, that's kind of fun.
Cool. Yeah.
But yeah, I didn't, you know, and even when they stay at a motel and Wally sneaks off and goes to a party, even then I was kind of like, yeah, that's fun. And it's real life as well. You know, that's the thing about it. It did feel more real life than I was expecting it to, which is a positive for me. I thought that was a positive.
Excellent. So don't make me go. You don't actually have to go anywhere to see it.
You don't. It's streaming on Prime Video.
Ah, excellent. It's on the watch list. And what else you got for us?
So, we've got a film called 18 and a Half. Now,
okay.
I'm going to give you the synopsis before anybody thinks it's something else, okay? It's set in 1974. A White House transcriber is thrust into the Watergate scandal when she obtains the only copy of the infamous 18 and a half minute gap in Richard Nixon's tapes.
Ooh, okay.
So you do have to have a fair amount of knowledge of the Watergate scandal, okay?
Mm. Oh, right, okay, yeah.
That's an issue. The other thing is, and this needs to be said, that this film isn't a true story at all. Neither Connie, who is the transcriber, nor Paul, her close aide, actually existed. There is no official evidence that the 18 and a half minute tapes were ever found. So this is kind of a fake news film.
Oh, okay, yeah, totally fake.
Yes. So you have to kind of buy into the story of the tape rather than Connie's storyline about her possibly breaking open Watergate and bringing down a very powerful man. The issue is the film doesn't really want to be a drama or a thriller. It wants to be a bit of everything. So at first it very much plays like a drama with Connie and Paul realizing what they have and that they could be being followed or worse, targeted for death. So they set out in the middle to the middle of nowhere to transcribe these tapes in a very seedy motel. The film then flips and becomes a bit of a comedy when Richard Kind, who, you know, Richard Kind is, whenever Richard Kind turns up, you think, okay, he's clearly playing the Richard Kind type of character who is a little bit weird, but very funny as well. He's the owner of the motel, and seems to want to make everything into a joke or a sex reference. It's really difficult to know if that is meant to happen or it's just if Richard Kind is just being himself. And that's part of the issue is when that starts to happen, you think, okay, where is this film? What is this film? What is it doing? Also, at the motel is a group of free radicals who are more interested in being free and engaging in sex than anything else. There is no reason that these three people should ever be in this film except for them being some light relief. The problem is that they come across as being in completely the wrong film. You know, to me, This is a conspiracy thriller. It's not a sexual revolution movie.
Yeah.
Why are they here?
There's nothing about that in the trailer I saw either.
Exactly.
Random.
But they are in it quite a lot.
Okay, fair enough.
And if that wasn't bad enough, Connie and Paul become friends with an older couple and are invited to their house for dinner. The issue arises that the older couple are very much there for sexual experimentation with anybody they can get their hands on. The whole dinner sequence, which is quite awkward to watch, lasts for about half the film. I'm not sure why it runs for so long either. And then the outcome has nothing to do with Connie or Paul or the tapes.
Oh, okay. This is two films meshed together then.
Yes. This is the weird thing.
Weird.
But you know what? That's kind of the film in a nutshell. It's nothing to do with something. It's nothing to do with this. But the other thing it is to do with, we've sort of forgotten about. It's all the bits in the film that I kind of think add up to nothing. I don't know. It's just so confusing to know what genre this movie is. Which, look, that's fine. We've reviewed movies where we've said it's great that it straddles genres, or it's bad that it's trying to do loads of things. This film really doesn't know where it wants to sit. Mm. And why anybody would make a Watergate scandal movie that mainly revolves around sex is beyond my comprehension, really. It is a strange movie, is the best way I can describe it. A strange movie.
Put that in the posters. I mean, from the trailer, this looks like kind of a quirky shoot. It looks a little bit like almost kind of documentary with a funny old lens on it.
And that's what I thought. Because when I first saw the trailer, when it first dropped, I thought, oh, that could be interesting to review. Yeah, and also I've got to say, it's got Bruce Campbell in it, who, you know, is one of my heroes. I love Bruce Campbell. He's only in it briefly, by the way. And I was like, okay, this is interesting. And then I watched the film and I'm like, I think I've been missold something here. I don't really
It sounds
understand.
Very different to what the trailer
just didn't showed. Get it. Didn't get it at all. As I said, strange movie. Yeah. Strange old movie, this one.
A bizarre watch. So where is this available?
So this is on digital platforms. It's also on DVD as well.
Cool. And it's significantly longer than 18 and a half minutes.
It is. Yeah, it really is. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I've just realised, as we were talking about 18 and a half minutes, we went over the mark of 18 and a half minutes.
Oh!
Wouldn't it be awful if we just had silence for 18 and a half minutes? And then the end? Just at the
time. I think the emergency tape might kick in then.
It probably would.
It probably would, yeah, absolutely.
So what you got for us next week, Mark?
So next week we're going to be talking about Ryan Gosling in an action movie called The Grey Man.
The Grey Man.
The Grey Man. I know, quite mysterious, isn't it? We're also going to be talking about Alexander Skarsgård in a Norse mythology movie called The Northman.
Oh, okay.
Do you see the things North going on? We're talking about men here, I think. So let's change it up for a third movie, and let's review an animated movie about monsters that wrestle called Rumble.
Oh, that's 100% the one I'm going for.
Do you know what? It's weird. You tell people there's a movie out there about wrestling monsters, and all of a sudden they go, oh, well, that sounds like my type of thing. You know, I mean, okay, fine. So we'll be doing those movies next week.
Excellent. I shall bring my wrestling gear.
Don't. Please don't, because I worry that they are just some sort of speedos. That's it.
That's all you need, isn't it?
Oh, I don't need...
Speedos and oil.
Let's not have that image. Oh, no.
Film reviews and movie news. With Stuart Pink and Mark Searby.